From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today. We're going to be talking about a saint that you may or may not know a lot about, but in my opinion, she's one of the great multi-talented saints with a varied background, and that's St. Hildegard von Bingen. There's a brand new book that talks about some of her works, and that is St. Hildegard's Garden. We'll be joined by Layla Lawler later in the show. And we'll be looking at one of the great shrines of the East Coast, and that's the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. We'll be joined by Father Flavio Helio, the shrine director there. And hopefully someday, if you live on the East Coast, you can check that one out. When I used to live out there, I went to that shrine a number of times. Check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on EWTN on Sunday, September 28th at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. One of my favorite episodes, They Might Be Saints, Bishop Frederick Berriga. Trekking across Michigan's wilderness earned him the nickname the Snowshoe Priest, but his heroic virtue, bringing the gospel to Native Americans and immigrant miners, may earn Bishop Frederick Berriga sainthood. And I know for a fact that they are investigating a new miracle there that could lead to him being declared blessed. So one of my favorite episodes relating to Bishop Frederick Berriga. And check out my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturday, October 4th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time, Paray-le-Monial. I'll be visiting Paray-le-Monial in France, where St. Margaret Mary Ellicoque first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart. I explore the origins of this cherished devotion and some of those recreations in that one. Relating to the heart of Jesus are absolutely amazing. So very proud of that episode, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Paray-le-Monial. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today's day, we've got Blessed Francisco Martin Fernandez de Posadas, who lived from 1664 to 1713 in Spain. And the 365 Days with Mary project looks at Our Lady of La Salette in France in the year 1846. And the question of the week, what is the most common profile of a Marian visionary? I'll try to answer that one later in the show. And also the miracle of the day, which is Padre Pio first receiving the visible permanent stigmata on September 20th in the year 1918. We'll talk about that one in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And we have an interesting miracle claim coming up this week. And I always find these interesting when they're claimed. And so many Eucharistic miracles are claimed around the world. And not all of them are miracles. And some of them are things that people get excited about. But after some testing or some further investigation, they turn out not to be. But of course, it's always a good thing to focus on the Eucharist and to elevate that in our lives of faith. So I report this with some skepticism, but perhaps this is something that we'll find out more about later. In Bogota, in Colombia, and that's a city I was in just last year, there was a miracle reported in Parroquia San Joaquin. Now, according to a article in Colombia from accidente.co, a parishioner said that during a rosary service, the consecrated host began to palpitate visibly under the direction of Father Juvel Zuluaga. And this report is based on witness testimony, and no official confirmation or investigation appears in the report. And it's not clear whether this is very recent or how fresh the event is. But the report says the phenomenon is something people are sharing on social media. And so that's something that if we hear more about, we'll report that back to you. But again, this is in Bogota, Colombia, a Eucharistic miracle with a palpitating host. And hopefully we'll learn about that in the days and weeks to come. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And You can send your answers to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. And just this past week or so, we had the canonization of Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati, and their feast days were announced. And the feast day for Carlo Acutis will be, as I predicted, or as everyone thought, October 12th, his death anniversary. And so the question from last week was, what major Marian miracle from South America is also celebrated on October 12th? And of course, that answer is Our Lady of Aparecida, that 1717 miracle in Brazil with the three fishermen finding that statue of Mary in the water. And many miracles were attributed to her. And if you go to that shrine, you'll be absolutely amazed. It's the largest Marian shrine in the entire world. It's truly enormous and breathtaking. So we just did an episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter about this. People can go to, you can search for on-demand Miracle Hunter Aparecida. And you can watch that episode on demand. So the question for this week is, in which approved Marian apparition does Mary hold the Christ child? So if you think about it, in a lot of the Marian apparitions, she is not holding Jesus in her arms, but in some very few cases, and I only know of a couple. So the answer, the question is, in which approved Marian apparitions does Mary hold the Christ child? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter or questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the fastest, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Layla Lawler about St. Hildegard in a brand new book out from Sophie Institute Press, St. Hildegard's Garden. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We love talking about saints on this program, and one of the greatest saints, in my opinion, in the history of the Catholic Church is a doctor of the Church. Her name is St. Hildegard von Bingen. And she was considered to be a mystic and a scholar, writing many pages on her visions. Wrote regarding science, and wrote and even devised her own language. So there's a book that she wrote, the Book of Divine Works, Causes and Cures, and some of her works rival some of the great intellectuals, theologians, and royals of her time or any time. So she's quite a remarkable person. And there's a brand new book that's out that details her life and some of her contributions, and that is St. Hildegard's Garden. It's recipes and remedies for healing body and soul, and it's available from Sophia Institute Press. We're so excited today to be joined by the person who wrote the foreword for that book, and that's Layla Lawler. Welcome to the program today, Layla.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, St. Hildegard's a fascinating person. I think that many people might know her for the sort of the trivia point that she's a doctor of the Church, and one of the more recent ones to be named, I suppose. When we look at St. Hildegard...
She was the most recent until Pope Leo just made a new one in St. John Henry Newman, but up until then, I think she was the most recent.
Yeah, exactly right. And so her biography is amazing, or her list of accomplishments or list of things that she was interested and involved with are unrivaled, in my opinion, something that we don't see for many saints like this. And so when we talk about St. Hildegard, who was she?
She was a 12th century figure, and she was a person who actually was sent to live at the convent when she was very young. Ultimately, she became the abbess, and so you could say that she was steeped in the Benedictine way of life, because she actually was raised with the Benedictine nuns. And she just had an amazing mind and an amazing spirit. So she became the abbess of the congregation, but she also was somebody who was so, well, she was a theologian, a philosopher, a musician. As the abbess, she composed musical works for the liturgies that the foundation would celebrate. She also was sought after by many figures of her time, including popes and emperors. And one of the popes actually instructed her to go and teach, to go out and preach and teach. So, yeah, you are right in characterizing her as, I would say, uniquely fascinating and visionary.
Yeah, I suppose the word visionary has two meanings in this case, or at least she's has a visionary outlook on science and otherwise, and then she's considered to be a mystic. Talk a little bit about her mystical experiences and her writings about her pages of visions, or writings about her visions. Talk about that aspect of Hildegard.
Yeah, I mean, I think she started having visions at a very young age, and I think when you read what she wrote, you realize that she actually was taken up into the spiritual realm, and there's things she writes about that are really recountings of her involvement with the Trinity, just her apprehension of the grandeur of God. And at first, I think maybe her visions really troubled her, but then I think she began, with the help of her spiritual director, to realize that this really was God speaking to her, and then she was able to synthesize what she encountered into the other aspects of her life, which really were for the benefit of people around her, both artistically, medicinally, and in her thought. So, yeah, she's quite the character.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. The name of the book is St. Hildegard's Garden, written by Paul Ferris. Tell us a little bit about the author, Paul Ferris, and what his goals were, perhaps, for writing this book.
So Paul Ferris is a Frenchman, and the book was originally published by him in French, published by an Italian publisher, and then Sophia Institute Press took it on to translate it and bring it to the American audience. And the idea of the book, I think, is really wonderful for us today because, so the first part of it is about her and, you know, the things we've been talking about, her poetry, her medicine, her music, and so on, a biography of her. And it's you know, very informative. It's not very long. The majority of the book is taken up with her the plants that she was interested in. So it's actually a book that is very beautifully made and can function as a coffee table book. It's something you would put out to be enjoyed and paged through. And a big part of it is reproductions of antique prints of plants, botanical prints, and then a description of each. So one page has the print and the other page has a written description. And that description includes its uses and its nature, and then what St. Hildegard thought about it and would have done with it. And then,
because she was an expert in plants, correct? I mean, she cataloged these hundreds or thousands of plant ingredients or plants and minerals, and so this is an offshoot of the work of St. Hildegard, is that correct?
Yes. So, I mean, instead of just having like a list, the author has provided these these prints, which really helps us in identifying the plants, because these old botanical prints are so interesting because, unlike a photograph that shows you the plant in one stage of its development, the print shows you the leaves, the flowers, a portion of the root, the stalk, the seeds. And so it's all in one image, and so it makes it a lot easier to identify the plant when you're out and about. And what Hildegard did was she took the knowledge, this ancient knowledge that you'll find in all cultures. I mean, I would say that our culture is the only one that kind of doesn't know this information. Every other time did know this information about the plants that are available to us, both for our culinary use, but also for our medicinal use. And so what she did with her very analytical mind is she took this knowledge, this very widespread knowledge, and cataloged it, as you say. So in the book, there's that section, and then there's a section that is remedies, and how to grow. There's a section on how to make your own medicinal garden, and then there's a section with recipes, and there's an index. So it's a really useful book. I would say that maybe there are books that you'd have on your shelf that are much more encyclopedic, but this one kind of has it all and is a great introduction to this aspect of her knowledge and what she was interested in.
We've been talking today with Leila Lawler, the forward writer and spokesperson for St. Hildegard's Garden, a brand new book from Sophia Institute Press that looks at St. Hildegard von Bingen and some of her works. When we consider all these plants and minerals and other things that are detailed in this book and the work that St. Hildegard put into this, what can we draw from this and learn about the person of St. Hildegard?
Well, I think the thing that I would love people to know is that what the book gives us a glimpse of is this medieval view of things, which is far more integrated than the view we have today. So we, in some ways, we think of ourselves as superior and more advanced from every other culture that's come before us. But the thing that we have lost is this idea of God having created the world and set it in order, and having done so for the benefit of man, as we read in Genesis chapter 1, that God really, you know, he made man as the pinnacle of all of his creation, and the bridge between the invisible and the visible. Man is the spiritual and material being, the only one. So he's the link between the angels and the created world, and he says to man, you know, be fruitful and multiply and subdue the earth, and basically gives everything to man to name and make use of. Hildegard really had that vision, that way of looking at things, because she was the quintessential medieval. So for her, every part of the hierarchy reflects something of whatever is above it, ultimately having reaching its pinnacle in God. So for her, any ailment that a person has can find its remedy in the created world. And of course, she was also, because she was a wonderful theologian and understood the spiritual realm so well, she understood that man is a fallen creature. So she knew that we would suffer and that ultimately we would die. But she especially wanted to address herself to the imbalances and even the emotional and problems that people had that she also tied to the spiritual. So what you get out of the book, I think, is not just like, here's an herb and here's what it's good for, but here's this plant and how it fits into God's, the hierarchy of being and God's creation, and how we can use it with wisdom to enhance our physical well-being and even our emotional well-being. And so that that I think is a beautiful thing about how she looked at things.
And for people who are interested in picking up this book from Sophia Institute Press, what's the best place that people can go?
Well, they can go to sophiainstitutepress.com. Sophia Institute Press, maybe, yeah, as soon as you look for that, you'll find it. It might be just sophiainstitute.com. And the books are available there, and they almost always have a very nice discount or some sort of promotion going on there. And the books are very reasonably priced. And, of course, also wherever you get books, you can find it.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Leila Lawler, talking to us about this brand-new book, St. Hildegard's Garden, from Sophia Institute Press. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Thanks for having me.
God bless. That was Leila Lawler. She wrote the foreword for this book, St. Hildegard's Garden, one of the most incredible saints that you ever will hear about, and you'll learn more if you pick up this book, St. Hildegard's Garden. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting the emails. I've got a pretty strange email inbox, but I also love answering the questions in person. And I travel around the country and give talks at different shrines or conferences or parishes. If you'd like to have me speak at your parish, you can just send me an email. Go to the website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, and you can send me a message that way. And I usually speak for about 45 minutes about Eucharistic miracles or Marian apparitions or how the church investigates the supernatural or about the saints. And then I open it up to questions afterwards. So I always love hearing what people are thinking about. But send me a message for having me come out to your shrine or to your parish at some point in the future. And so we have a great question for today. It's actually a good one. Dear Miracle Hunter, what is the most common profile of a Marian visionary? And that's thank you, Bob. Well, thanks, Bob, for your question. And it's a good one. And I think that, you know, we have something like 2,500 Marian apparitions throughout Christian history. I've documented them all on my website, miraclehunter.com. And, of course, that isn't the total number of approved Marian apparitions. I think we have something like 30 that the local bishop has declared as supernatural, and maybe 16 out of those has the Vatican given its stamp of approval, too. So it's a much smaller number, but we can sort of examine those visionaries and get a profile from them. I would say that we talk about where they're from. Most Marian apparitions happen in Europe. We have Spain, Italy, and France as the favorite places of Mary to visit. And then these are mostly children, I would say. The average age of a Marian visionary might be something like 13. And then, of course, Juan Diego is an exception at 57 years old. And some of the more modern visionaries, Gladys Moda de Quiroga, for example, from San Nicolas, Argentina, and others are older than the traditional children visionaries that we might see. But there's somewhat of a mix. And then when we talk about what is their background, we see them as either students or shepherds or religious. Those are the most common people to receive visions of Mary. There have been cases of wealthy businessmen, and there have been cases of popes receiving visions of Mary. But if you have to go by the standard profile, it's this younger person, perhaps as a student, a shepherd, or a religious. And one of the questions is, does Mary only appear to priests and nuns? And of course, that answer is no. And by percentage, a very small percentage of the approved Marian visionaries are, in fact, in religious life or entering religious life. So that's sort of a misnomer as well. But that's sort of the background of what a person receiving a Marian or someone with a Marian visionary, what their profile is. And what is noteworthy, in my opinion, is I think that when we talk about the popes, 266 or so popes, and something like a third of them are canonized saints or blesseds and saints. So it's a pretty good percentage there. A good retirement plan, as Pope Francis once put it. But when you talk about Marian visionaries, that's a pretty high percentage as well. Of the very highly approved Marian apparitions, we talk about St. Catherine Laboure or Bernadette Subaru or St. Juan Diego or the Fatima children, some of these very famous examples. We see some percentage of them making it on to sainthood as well. So that works out pretty well in the end as well. So thanks, Bob, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day. And today we're talking about Our Lady of La Salette. And of course, we have an interview about Our Lady of La Salette today. And that is on September 19th. But for the today's date of September 20th, we have Our Lady with the Silver Foot from Toul in France in the year 1284. And so on September 20th, 1284, shortly before midnight, Helwig experienced a vision of the Virgin Mary while praying in sorrow with the death of her husband and daughter. And the Virgin ordered her to go searching for Rimbert, the guardian of the entrance to the city. And she warned him about an enemy ready to set their homes on fire and slaughter the people there. And the Virgin revealed a sign that her foot would be shown under her garment. When she relayed the news, she was mocked until the people saw the statue reveal her foot. To memorialize the event and show gratitude for the protection granted to them by the Blessed Virgin Mary, the people of Toul had a shoe of pure silver made to cover the statue's foot. That is one of the more interesting Marian miracle stories you're ever going to hear. That is Our Lady with the Silver Foot from Toul in France in the year 1284. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com. Pick up the book, download the free app, or you can go to the Facebook feed of 365 Days with Mary and join any of the 10,000 followers who get a different Marian devotion on their Facebook each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about what miracle in Christian history happened on that day's date in some year. And so today's date is actually a big one as far as miracles go. Padre Pio received his first visible stigmata on September 20th, 1918, while praying before a crucifix in the choir loft of his monastery chapel in San Giovanni Rotondo. And again, this was in the monastery of Our Lady of Grace in San Giovanni. And he, after offering Mass and praying in thanksgiving, Padre Pio reportedly had a mystical vision of Christ, during which the five wounds of Christ, the hands, the feet, and the side, appeared on his body. And these wounds stayed with him for 50 years, until shortly before his death in 1968, when they inexplicably healed. And so that is today's miracle of the day, the first wounds of Padre Pio on September 20th, 1918. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. And of course, we just had the big canonization with Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. And we have more canonizations coming up in October. But talking about future ones, the Holy Father, Pope Leo XIV, received an audience, His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Supreme Pontiff authorized the same dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Anna Fulgida Bartolacelli, a lay faithful of the Association of the Silent Workers of the Cross, born February 24, 1928, in Rocca Santa Maria in Italy, and died in Formigine in Italy as well on July 27, 1993. And she, according to the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints website, she was a faithful layperson of the Association of the Silent Workers of the Cross, and she had a profound interior life, which she nourished with Holy Mass, Eucharistic Adoration, frequent confession, personal prayer, the Liturgy of the Hours, and the Rosary, and spiritual exercises were a privileged time for her to rekindle her faith and spend more time with Jesus. And that is the new Venerable Anna Fulgida Bortolacelli from Italy. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this every week where we look at a person on the path to sainthood and see how they line up exactly to each date of the calendar year. And so for today, Blessed Francisco Martin Fernandez de Posadas, who lived from 1644 to 1713 in Spain. And he was born on November 25th, 1644, at Cordova in Spain. And he decided at a young age to be a priest. And at age 19, he entered the Dominican novitiate, and he was a noted preacher, a home missioner in western Spain, and a popular confessor. He was known for spiritual gifts, including reports of the ability to levitate. And he wrote several works, including a biography of St. Dominic de Guzman. And he died on September 20th, 1713, at Cordova in Spain of natural causes, and he was beatified on September 20th, 1818, by Pope Pius VII. And that is today's Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Francisco Martin Fernandez de Posadas from Spain. And for people who want to check out They Might Be Saints, you can buy the book at EWTNRC.com. I think it's my best one. And people can also watch the series, which airs weekly on EWTN on Sunday, September 28th at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. They Might Be Saints features the episode on Bishop Frederick Barriga. Trekking across Michigan's wilderness earned him the nickname the Snowshoe Priest, but his heroic virtue brought the gospel to Native Americans and immigrant miners, and that might earn Bishop Frederick Barriga sainthood. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Father Flavio Gilio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I'm a Chicago guy, and that's where I live now, but for some years I lived in the Boston area, and one shrine that I loved to visit while I was there was a shrine called Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. And it's, of course, dedicated to Our Lady of La Salette, and that's that famous, highly approved apparition that occurred on September 19th, 1846, 6,000 feet up in the French Alps. And Mary is believed to have come to Maximine and Melanie while they tended sheep, and her appearance in sorrow and tears calls for conversion and penance for sins. And I was able to go there a few years ago and actually go 6,000 feet up into that amazing shrine in France. And we filmed there for an episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And people can watch that if they go to the EWTN On Demand page. Watch it for free on the EWTN app or on the website. You can see that incredible shrine there in France. Well, we're so excited today with the feast day upon us, related to Our Lady of La Salette, to be joined by the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, and that is Father Flavio Gilio. Welcome back to the program today, Father.
And thank you for having me in the program. I appreciate it. There couldn't be better time, actually, because we are approaching September 19, and that is actually, for us missionary of Our Lady of La Salette, a very special date in the sense that we celebrate the anniversary of the apparition of Our Lady of La Salette. So thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. No, it's great to speak with you again. And I think that when we talk about some of these very famous apparitions of Mary, the highly approved ones, we talk about Fatima Lourdes Guadalupe and some from France. And this one of Our Lady of La Salette is in that sort of uppermost level of highly investigated and approved Marian apparitions in history. So the fact that you have a shrine here in the United States which honors her is a big deal. And so for those people who don't know the story as well, talk a little bit about that fateful day on September 19th, 1846. Who were Maximin and Melanie, and what did they see?
Sure. Maximin and Melanie were two very young shepherds. Melanie was 14 years old at the time of the apparition, and Maximin was even younger, 3 years younger, actually. He was 11 years old. And they were in one of the many lost hamlets in the French Alps, shepherding the animals. And all of a sudden, waking up from their daily nap, and they realized that some of the animals actually disappeared, so they started to search for them. And while they were actually looking for them, all of a sudden, they realized that there was a light shining in front of them. They approach, and the children, their memories, they describe that the more they were approaching to this ball of light, the more actually was melting, and what appeared was a lady weeping, sitting in a rock. And of course, they didn't understand that at the beginning the identity of the lady. They thought that she was one of the villagers. Maximin thought it was somebody's wife running away from her husband, actually. And they approach her. And as soon as the children approach this beautiful lady, the beautiful lady stood up and invited them to get closer. And she started speaking to them with the opening words, "Come near, my children, I have a great news." And all the rest is history, in the sense that after the event, the two children went back to the village, the very small village of La Salette. And again, they didn't absolutely understand the identity of the lady. And actually, it was an elderly woman, Delpra, who, when the children described the beautiful lady whose son is in heaven, actually, she was the first one that got it really right, in the sense that she said, "Oh, I know who this beautiful lady was. Actually, she was our Blessed Mother." And then from there, a couple of years later, the Bishop of Grenoble, Bishop de Brouillard, actually wrote an apostolic letter to the diocese, proclaiming the apparition worthy to be believed. And that is really when the devotion to Our Lady of La Salette actually started.
Wonderful. Well, that's a wonderful summary. We're talking today with Father Flavio Giglio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. And of course, we have the feast day here upon us. And so this is an exciting time to talk about this great and famous Marian apparition that was fully approved by the Catholic Church. And one of the very striking aspects of this apparition, and that's always depicted in the art and the stories about Our Lady of La Salette, of course, Mary is weeping. She's in tears. She's the sorrowful mother. Talk a little bit about the message of Our Lady of La Salette. What is the meaning, especially in the context of her and her tears?
Well, the meaning of the message goes beyond the place and the specific time when the apparition itself happened. Is an eloquent message for every time and every place, in the sense that the core of the message is Mary's call to conversion and to return to her son. In other words, to ignite, so to speak, in our own lives what the Bible calls metanoia, right? That is turning our life more and more and more toward the Christ, so that, to paraphrase St. Paul, it is not us who live, but the Christ within us that lives in and through us. And that is the big call, the big great news that Mary came to share with us and to remind us.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Flavio Helio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. And I mentioned earlier, Father, that I used to live in Boston, so I've been to your shrine on numerous occasions in the past. And this shrine is one of the big ones on the East Coast, so it gets huge crowds, especially during winter and in the Christmas holiday. But when we talk about the message of Our Lady of La Salette and how it is lived out at your shrine or presented to the world, talk a little bit about, for those people who come as pilgrims to the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette, what will they experience there?
Well, the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette goes back to 1952, when the construction actually of the first buildings of the shrine was announced. And then along the year, of course, the shrine has had its own life. And today, to get back to your question, today the way that we try to live the message of Our Lady of La Salette is all based around one word, that is reconciliation. Reconciliation in biblical sense, that it hints to a new prophetic humanity. And the way that we strive to embody that is through our ministry to seven multi-ethnic communities. We serve currently the Malayali community from India, the Asian community, Spanish community, Portuguese community, Filipino communities, and of course, Anglo-speaking community. And what we really try to do is just not simply having this community and doing their own faith journey, but really to grow together as brother and sister in Christ and having Christ as a unifying reality that is stronger than, of course, as you can imagine, all the cultural and ethnic and religious differences that each one of those communities embodies. And so the shrine is really growing awfully in being for the New England such a prophetic presence that, yes, we can grow, we can live together as brother and sister rooted in Jesus the Christ through the maternal presence of Our Lady of La Salette.
Beautiful.
And that's only one way. Then, I mean, our ministry being also the property of the shrine, allowing us actually to do so, and the venues that we do have, they really span. They are really diversified. We go from weekend retreats and day of recollection, spiritual exercises of Saint Ignatius of Loyola. Conferences, events that try to bring together faith and art, daily masses, daily sacrament of reconciliation every day, soup kitchen for our neighbors more in need in the area of Attleboro. And so you really see how this call to be reconciler, to reconcile the brokenness that we see around us, it really takes different faces and aspects.
We're talking today with Father Flavio Helio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette. And for those people who go and are looking to learn more about Our Lady of La Salette and her message, I know from my visits there that you have some beautiful statues and areas on there, devotional areas. Talk a little bit about what people would experience as far as the artwork or the connection to Our Lady of La Salette.
Sure. Well, first of all, it depends on the season that they are coming. So, for example, if they will be planning to come in winter, as you were mentioning before, the shrine really becomes a magical place of devotions and prayer, thanks to the very well-known Christmas Festival of Lights. This year, the festival will display 1 million lights, around most of our property. It will run from November 22nd, 2025 until January 1st, 2026 and open from 5 to 9 every day. But then if they come in any time of the year, a lot of people call actually our shrine an island of mercy and peace. We make available to everybody absolutely beautiful grounds, a very silent and peaceful shrine church, a chapel of lights where we have more than 3,000 devotional candles, and every candle, as you can imagine, has a story, intentions, and prayers behind it. We have the welcome center that we are blessed to be able to open it to group of different size and kinds. And then, of course, we have the La Salle Retreat Center that allow us also to minister in the form of workshops, seminars, and retreat. And last but not the least, in our property, we have a beautiful replica, actually, of the apparition that is traditionally known as the La Salle Corner. And basically, it's a replica of the three phases of the apparition, that is Mary weeping, then the dialogue between Our Lady La Salette and the two children, Maximin and Melanie, and then Mary ascending into heaven. And along with it, also, it's worth mentioning two more areas. One is the Garden of St. Francis, and the other one, always tied up with the Marian presence of the shrine, is the Rosary Pond, a beautiful pond dedicated to our Blessed Virgin Mary. And it is called Rosary Pond because actually the perimeter of the pond is marked by a huge decade of rosary.
Beautiful. No, I encourage people to check out your shrine. I've been there numerous times, and it's quite beautiful, and it's a special event to be there around the Christmas season. I think it's a beautiful place, one of the most beautiful shrines in the United States at that time of year. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Flavio Helio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro. For people who want to find out more, is there a website or a phone number that people can get in touch?
Yes, we do have both. The phone number is 508-222-5410. And our website is La Salette AttleboroShrine.org. And visitors can find all the kind of information, opening hours, special events going on, and once again, all the information that they may need to plan a visit during our Christmas season that will start on November 22nd until January 1st of 2026, with the Christmas lights going on every evening at 5 o'clock until 9 o'clock p.m.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Flavio Helio, Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette, talking to us about Our Lady of La Salette and the beautiful shrine there in Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
And thank you for having me. God bless you.
God bless. That was Father Flavio Helio from the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette. Check them out at LaSaletteAttleboroShrine.org. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today, Layla Lawler, talking about St. Hildegard's Garden, and Father Flavio Helio, about talking about the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturday, October 4th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time, the episode on Paray-le-Monial. I visit Paray-le-Monial in France, where St. Margaret Mary Ellicoque first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart. I explore the origins of this cherished devotion. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.